session number 27074, reel 1.
Bamberger, reel 1. Squadron leader, could you tell me where and when you were born, please?
Well, I was born at Hyde in Cheshire, on the outskirts of Manchester. But I couldn't stand the place, so I left at the age of 3, as my father went to work for what is now known as Unilever at Port Sunlight.
And what did your father do for a living?
My father was what an accountant. He was a finance clerk.
And what about your mother? Did she work or stay at home?
No. I don't want you to switch off. Okay. Like most mothers of my generation, they stayed at home and looked after the family. There was virtually no suggestion of going out to work at all.
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
I had an elder sister and a younger sister. No other, didn't have any brother siblings. My elder sister won a scholarship and went to a convent school. Myself, I probably wasn't bright enough for that, so I just went to the local elementary school, which I left at 14.
And while you were at school, did you have any hobbies or sports that you pursued?
My school was an RC school based in a place called New Ferry, not far from Birkenhead. And facilities were certainly primitive compared to today's standards. We had no gymnasium and no sports facilities. We just played games in a tarmac-covered play yard and had a few fights. And these days, children say they were bored, but with few facilities of any, we kept ourselves busy.
And did you have any interest in, at that early age, any interest in any form of aviation at all?
Not far from my home, Port Sunlight, I can't give you the actual mileage, probably about 10 miles, was an grass airfield called Houghton Park. And frequently light aircraft used to fly overhead from there. And on one particular occasion, this small biplane force landed in a field near my home, which was caused a great deal of excitement. There was also an RAF airfield at Sealand, some 30 miles away, and the sergeant pilot from there lived quite close by, and he used to, the term used to buzz his home. So that probably aroused my first interest in aviation.
I was wondering as well, did you make any model aircraft or anything of that order?
I don't think as a child, when I say child, up to when I out to work when I was 14, had any interest at all in making model airplanes. Though the sight of an aircraft used to produce excitement because there were not many of them around. And though my first job was delivering fish on a bicycle, I obviously was not aspiring to be an aviator. But a few years later, before I was 17, there was an advert put in the local press that an auxiliary air force squadron was being formed at Hooton Park and they wanted recruits.
And what squadron was that that was forming?
That was 610 Squadron of the Auxiliary Air Force. It was not Royal then, it was just the Auxiliary Air Force. And as soon as I was 17, I applied to join the squadron. Now then, at that time, all the pilots, or people to train as pilots in the Auxiliary Air Force, were officers. Most of them very affluent. So I did not inspire to be a pilot. And when I was offered a choice of jobs in the Auxiliary Air Force, I chose to be trained as a photographer. A photographer's main job was developing and producing the photographs with a wide range of equipment. The actual photography was normally done by an air gunner sitting in the back open cockpit of the aircraft which the squadron were flying there, which were called Hawker Harts. They were biplanes. But probably because I was fairly keen, I was frequently around, certainly early on Saturday mornings, when some of the pilots wanted to do photographic exercises. So I find myself on frequent occasions lying down on my belly in a Hawker Hart or Audax. You slid open the base of the aircraft so you could look out, and you directed the pilot onto the target he was trying to photograph by just using the cross wires of the undercarriage. It was a very fascinating, exciting, certainly for someone of 17 years old, and that you got all oil in your face and the smell of the oil was, again, almost thrilling and not unpleasant.
Could I ask you about how you, the process of how you applied to join? Was there a system that was in place?
How I became a photographer was just, I went along to Hooton Park and there was a choice of jobs: aircraft fitter, aircraft wireless operators, trainer, the whole gambit surrounding aircraft. And photography seemed to me the most attractive, even though at the time I was training to be an electrical engineer in civilian life.
Did you have to pass a medical or any kind of written examination?
One's interview was fairly brief, but though I cannot recollect at the moment, there was certainly no exam, but they probably questioned you as regards education. In that, though I'd left school at 14, in that area, I had something on my side because I was going to night school three nights a week, and so academically, I was improving, and so I suppose once I told them I was going to night school three nights a week studying maths and electronics, etc., they thought, well, I must be able to cope with being trained as a photographer.
And you mentioned the kind of character of the pilots with the Auxiliary Air Force. Did that differ from the Volunteer Reserve in 36, or was the Volunteer Reserve actually formed at that point?
I cannot recollect all the details of the Volunteer Reserve, but there was not. Most of the Volunteer Reserve pilots started with were all joined as sergeants, where joining the Auxiliary Air Force as a photographer, I joined as an AC2, the lowest rank possible in the Air Force.
Did they issue with you a uniform at that time?
It was rather amusing as a guard uniform because as soon as you'd signed the bottom line, you were issued with your uniform. And I don't know whether they had a surplus over from the Great War, but we were issued with the standard RAF uniform, but we were issued with putties and things like that, and which I don't think anyone ever put on.
As well with the squadron, you mentioned some of the aircraft, obviously the Hart and the Audit.
Yeah.
Could you give me a kind of thumbnail sketch of what they were like as aircraft, their characteristics?
Well, the Hawker Hart was a biplane, covered all in canvas, and the fuselage covered in canvas. They, of course, had their undercarriage was not retractable. The props were of fixed setting, no variable pitch. And the cockpits obviously were open to the elements. The pilot obviously was strapped in, but when flying in the back cockpit, which had a gun rail around it to take a Lewis machine gun, all you were held in by was one wire, which was fixed to the base of the aircraft and which you attached to your harness.
And with your role as a photographer, you said, was it Saturday mornings you would go along with the pilots? And
yeah, well, sometimes. Though officially flying was not a role of a photographer, I obviously must have impressed with my work, because when the commanding officer, a fellow called Ian Parker, wanted a photographer for a particular exercise, he chose me, even to take a photograph of an island of Scotland which he owned and had a house on. I took all the photographs of that house from here.
What was your ground duties then? If obviously photographers were not meant to fly, what was your ground duties?
My ground duties as a photographer was sometimes they'd want to photograph a group of the squadron or the squadron at work. One unusual occasion, I remember, a swarm of bees settled on the tail of an aircraft while it was parked. And I took a magnificent photograph of this swarm of bees, but that was using a fixed ground camera on a tripod. But our main job was developing films taken from the air. You know, fixed films, not movies. And the main thing was taking what you call pinpoint, that's taking a photograph right over the target you wanted and getting that target, even if it was a church spire, right in the middle of the photograph. That was the technique. And the spire would come along and you'd in your sight, and it across, you get it to come through these cross wires of the undercarriage and then count probably about 5 seconds. When you assumed it'd be exactly under the aircraft, then you press the button and took the picture. But the reason we were taking pictures and the reason that you had photographers was 610 Squadron was at that time classified as a bomber squadron. And so we had to take what they call line overlaps. That's a series of photographs overlapping each other by 60%. And if a photograph overlaps another photograph by 60%, you can take, put them in a you get stereoscopic pairs, so you could use from that. Then, after doing a line overlap, you do another one alongside it, overlapping it by 40%. And that's how you created your maps. And so that was the job as a photographer, creating these maps, these stereoscopic pairs, and obviously developing the photographs and trying to produce the best photographs you could.
Can you tell me something about the organisation of the squadron?
The squadron had an auxiliary commanding officer and an auxiliary adjutant. But the person in the squadron that did all the work was the regular RAF adjutant. We also had a regular RAF flying instructor. And I think, yes, we had a regular engineering officer who probably had a supporting regular ground staff of probably about 50 personnel. But all the rest of the squadron were auxiliaries, and they served and trained in all functions.
How much training would the squadron and yourself be doing on a kind of a weekly or monthly basis?
The mountain of training you did was somewhat up to yourself, how enthusiastic you were, how you enjoyed what you were doing. So there was a Thursday evening ground training for everybody in their particular roles, and then every Saturday and every Sunday. Now then, work obviously prevented a number of people coming Thursday night or even Saturday mornings. But by Saturday afternoons and on Sundays, you got a fairly good turnout. But obviously there were family commitments, there was illness, and there was enthusiasm. And I happened to be, I found flying in aircraft and photography far more interesting than my job as an electrical engineering apprentice.
Well, obviously you were enthusiastic. Would that have been the case for most of the people who were involved in the squadron, or would there be people who would be enthusiastic at first and then kind of fall away?
After a while, a number of people who'd joined, say, as an engine fitter, decided it wasn't their cup of tea. So they may transfer to another trade, or they may decide that was enough. I don't know whether you signed on for a particular period. I cannot recollect. But obviously, there was a wastage factor. But in the Auxiliary Air Force, you created a wonderful camaraderie and friendship. And so, well, I'll just talk about the photographic section. Everybody turned up every weekend because that was where your social life was, as well as your hobby.
When you say your social life, would you carry on the outside of your training?
Frequently, you made friends who then you met during the week, or you certainly went out drinking on Saturday night with. Not too much, because you had to turn out on the Sunday morning for a parade or some other exercise. But if recruits for the Auxiliary Air Force came from a wide area, you know, some people live, say, 30 miles away or 40 miles away. So you couldn't get really close friends with them, except when they were at Hooton Park. But certainly Hooton Park, from both hobby and socially, became my life.
You mentioned the photographic section. Could you tell me a little bit how that was structured and organised?
Well, the photographic section had a regular RAF sergeant trained photographer, and who trained us on the optics of cameras, the photographic process, and of course we had a fully equipped dark room for printing, for glazing, and also we did a lot of plate photography using cameras on a tripod. And unlike these days, with the plate photography, you could use reducers or intensifiers to improve the plates. You also, when you were enlarging them on the projector, you could shade out parts you want held back with your hands. And so you sort of almost painted a photograph while you were producing it on the enlarger.
You sound like you were very interested in the photography side as much as the flying when you got the opportunity.
Oh, the photography and photography I enjoyed immensely. But the opportunity occurred, I'm afraid flying came number one.
How many fellow personnel were there within the photography section? You said there was a regular sergeant in charge, but how many people were there like yourself?
Training with me as a photographer were four other members of the section. And after a set period, we took written exams, which was vigilated by a flight lieutenant, a regular photographic officer. And after something like, I'll say 2 years, I became a leading aircraftsman, and I was very, very proud of that. One of the older members of the section, he became a corporal, which was, of course, a very, very high rank.
And can you tell me about some of maybe the personalities within the squadron, some of the pilots who were around at that time?
The members of the squadron, I'll talk about the officers first of all. The majority of them, in fact all of them, were very friendly, delightful people. But they all ran cars. RCO in Parker had a Rolls Royce and a chauffeur. And most of the officers were in that financial category. Probably the regular officers were the poorest of the officers. Some of the pilots were more daredevil than others. When you flew with them, you had greater confidence in some rather than others. But they were very much a big mixed bag. Some of them had been well educated at university. They tended to be certainly much older than I was at the time, when I say I was 17 or 18. They were probably more 25 up to 30. Some of them were sons of shipping magnates. I'd say all of them came from a prosperous background. But they were very friendly, but they lived in another world to ours except when we were flying. They did not socialise, and of course had an officer's mess, and so there was no contact other than when you were doing the job. As regards the remainder of the ground crew, they came from a very, like myself, they came from a very mixed bunch. Some of them had been to university. Some were still at university. Some were virtually totally uneducated. Hadn't continued any higher education once leaving school at 14. To give an example of that, some of them joined up, I think we called them at the time, ACHGDs. In other words, they do any duty. In other words, cleaning lavatories, you know. So there's a, then you had some people who were engineers, who were fitters, and very, very good engineers, who, certainly to my knowledge later in life, ran engineering companies. So very, very mixed. Except the one thing they all had was this, well, the majority had, was this loyalty and enthusiasm to the squadron. And when we really mixed and got to know one another very well, including the officers, was when we went to annual camp for 2 weeks. The first time we went was to Hawkins near Folkestone, and there we lived on the canvas, and of course worked and socialised together. And so that was, that increased the spirit of the squadron, the unit.
Could I ask you a little bit about the annual camps? Yeah. How did you get down there? How did you yourself get down to Hawking?
Travelling to annual camp, I cannot recollect the first one, Folkestone, but I'm fairly certain we'd have gone by train. When we went up to Accrington, Abbasinch, near Dumfries, not far from Glasgow, I flew up then as a photographer. Though again, I flew up so I could take a photograph of the aircraft in formation. At annual camp, as I mentioned earlier, again, we were under canvas at Abbasinch. Had one unique experience there, which I think is worth recording because I've never heard of it. I've never seen anything about written down anywhere, or certainly not photographed anywhere. One day, we were told at annual camp to turn out on parade at something like 7:30 in the morning for short arm inspection. And we all paraded. We were then instructed to drop our trousers, pull out our penis, and the medical officer came along and held it on a ruler to see if you had any diseases. So that, I say, one of those things that stick in your mind, because I've never heard of it ever before.
What kind of activities were the squadron involved in at the annual camp? What kind of exercises would they do?
Well, the annual camp, the main thing was, I mean, just doing things at weekend, and obviously sometimes you're grounded due to weather, it brought the whole unit together, even the ones that probably didn't turn up very frequently. They had to turn up for annual camp. And it brought everybody closer together. And so you flew in, the pilots, I remember I was a photographer, so sometimes I did fly. You flew in, the squadron flew in formations, they did gunnery exercises, firing their guns, they did photographic sorties, so that kept the photographers busy. excuse me. And of course you had parades and photographs were taken of both some of the social activities and the more serious squadron operations. But it brought everybody closer together.
So you obviously felt more as a squadron?
As a squadron, yes.